every day, everything changes. So it's like every time you wake up the next day, what is the news? It's hard to sort of plan, even for let alone the team prepared, sometimes reporting to prepare for this.
Yeah, it's been something. You know, I mean, the playoffs is one thing, right? I think the interest is higher, and I'm trying to come up with good story ideas for a playoff week, which I've never had to worry about. Usually at this stage of the season, we're talking about a coach getting fired, and you start the coaching search and the GM search. So this is definitely different. And then, right, last week, I think crystallized it for everyone just how, again, how different this year can be and how teams have to adjust and reporters have to adjust, because there was COVID news, I think, every day last week. I mean, Friday they didn't have any positive tests, but you still had to wait to see if there were no new positive tests, and the building wasn't open as early as it usually was. Saturday night, we had another guy added to the COVID list at 8 o'clock on Saturday night. So there's always something, and you know, that's one of the things Kevin Stefanski, the coach, has been great at, is handling those disruptions and making those adjustments and having his guys flexible enough. And you're right, I mean, who knows for sure, but it would be no surprise at all if we saw more of those issues this week, whether it's for the Browns and or the Steelers.
Scott, we heard about some of the assistant coaches in COVID protocol. Do they maintain any contact with other staff members during a game? Any idea how that works?
Yeah, they're not allowed during the game. During the week, you know, all the meetings are virtual now, right? All the player meetings, so to avoid close contact. So they'll still be in those meetings as long as they're healthy enough. But they're not allowed to practice, and then they're not allowed, obviously, at the games. But I also don't think they're allowed to watch on TV and, you know, phone in. I think that's against the NFL rules.
They're not doing a Ray Farmer kind of thing.
Exactly. I mean, that's one of the things, right? I mean, the communication is supposed to be limited, you know, and this is obviously a different year, but I think that's against the protocols. And I know you can't be calling the sidelines. I even don't think you're allowed to call the press box and talk to the coaches in the press box.
Why did you have to contaminate this conversation with the name Ray Farmer? I don't know what's going on here.
Oh boy.
So, owner Jimmy Haslam, do we hear from him lately? Is it good? You know, this is the time of the year where we start probably focusing on him again and how things were going. But now everything, we've kind of got the coach, we've got the system in place, the quarterback. What are his thoughts at this point? Or is anybody kind of reaching out to him at this point?
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, Jimmy tries to take a hands-off approach. We talk to him in training camp every year, him and Dee, and then usually not again until after the season. And usually when he talks after the season, it's either about a coach getting fired or he's saying he's going to keep a coach, right? I remember plenty of years where the finale's in Pittsburgh and we're in the concourse outside the Browns locker room in Heinz Field, and Jimmy's against the bare white, you know, those concrete walls, and he's talking about how he's not going to hire or not going to fire Hugh Jackson. So that's usually when we talk to him. So I don't expect to talk to him until, I'm not sure, after they get out of the playoffs, Super Bowl, who knows. But I think Jimmy appreciates not having to be out front, not having to talk about this. Kevin Stefanski gave him a game ball yesterday in the locker room. So, you know, that's the first, I'm sure he's gotten a game ball before, but that's the first time it's a going to the playoff game ball, right? And he bought the team in 2012. So, it's, you know, it's interesting. You look at the organization, and it's how long have these guys waited for this? For Jimmy Haslam, it's 8 years. For Joel Bitonio, he's the longest tenured player. It's 7 years. For Baker, it's 3 years. Kevin Stefanski, it's less than 1 year. So everybody appreciates it in a different way, given how much pain they had to go through as a member of this organization.
And Cleveland fans for almost two decades. How is it interacting either with the people through social media, those who have never experienced, you know, us who have gone maybe through with Bernie or Brian, you know, those type of eras, but then people who have no knowledge of what this is like? Any kind of feedback you're expecting or have seen?
I think it's interesting. You know, I mean, I was writing and working until about midnight, so I didn't spend a whole ton of time on social media. I checked some of the mentions when I was done, but I do think there's different segments of Browns fans. And, you know, you get the people that are old enough to remember 1964, and that was the last championship. And I think they have a different view of this organization. And then people like me who were young and teenage age when they had that run in the 1980s, right? So you hang on to that and you remember that, and that's the buddies on my text chain. That's not what they talk about, right? And those guys, you know, I mean, they text nonstop during the game, and there's worry that they're going to lose, right? I mean, I think that's what being a Browns fan throughout this is. When Pittsburgh is still within 8 points in the fourth quarter, it's, oh, my gosh, they're going to blow this. And for once, they didn't. And they came through in the clutch, and that's been a storyline throughout this year, and they've shown resilience. And then you get the guys that are, you know, if you're 20 years old, you've never seen a playoff game, right? And you don't know what it feels like. So I think it's interesting that you have all those layers of Browns fans and how they're reacting.
Well, it sort of shows even Browns fans locally, but nationwide, and we've always talked about, and there's always this talk about there's different clubs around the country, around the world. There's something about the Browns at a certain point that has kind of generated with a lot of folks. What made them put this on Sunday night as sort of the final of that weekend? What was it about this draw?
You know what? That's a good question that I don't know. You know, it's a rivalry. They must have liked the matchup. It's interesting because I don't know. You know, you're looking at that and you thought, well, you know, that it's not – Dallas didn't get in, so Dallas is a big primetime matchup. Maybe they would have gotten the Sunday night game if Dallas had gotten in, or if the Giants, you know, New York team had gotten in. You don't have the Patriots this year. I don't know if they thought it was the best matchup. It's interesting, though, because that is a big-time slot, right? That Sunday night football, even during the course of the year, is the biggest slot. So maybe they thought it'd be the best game, and they might be right. I was kind of surprised. You know, the opening line comes out from the odds makers, and it's only a four-point spread. I thought the Steelers would be bigger favorites than that, given that they rested so many guys yesterday and their history of beating up on the Browns. But as a four-point favorite, that means the odds makers expect it to be a good game. So maybe the NFL does too.
What can we expect in that game? What did we learn from yesterday's game that can play into next week?
Yeah, it's interesting because, like I mentioned, Steelers didn't play so many of their guys, so many of their key guys. I mean, you know, about a handful of key guys, including Ben Roethlisberger. So you didn't get the full view of their offense. The Browns are missing a bunch of COVID guys too, so you don't know exactly who's going to be back. But to me, there's two huge aspects of this game if the Browns are going to beat the Steelers again. And one is running the ball. The Browns had some success. Nick Chubb had that big 47-yard touchdown run early. But they didn't pound the Steelers like they have some other teams. And that's because the Steelers make it hard to run against them, and they have a really stout defense. But I think if the Browns are going to be able to beat Pittsburgh, what gives them the best chance is if they can establish the ground game, control the clock. So I'm interested to see how they can tweak that running attack to succeed and to have more success than they did yesterday and even in that October 18th matchup. And it'll be interesting because Bill Callahan, who's the guy, he's the architect behind that, the offensive line coach, and he's out. I don't know if he's out for the whole week or the game, depending on if he tested positive or is a close contact, but he won't be on the practice field for at least part of the week. So I think that's something that's worth watching. And then the second aspect is the Steelers passing attack versus the Browns secondary. And that was the only way they moved the ball yesterday, was some big plays downfield. And Mason Rudolph, the backup quarterback, was able to attack the Browns' backup cornerback. And it was Robert Jackson who's playing only because Denzel Ward tested positive and Kevin Johnson went on the COVID list Saturday. So there's a chance Denzel Ward can be back. He would have to remain asymptomatic. He'd have to pass these protocols. But there's a chance he could be back. If he is, that would be huge because that would give the Browns' secondary, which struggled for a good chunk of the year, it would give them a chance against what's a high-powered Steelers offense. I mean, Ben throws the ball 40 times a game. He's got three receivers that he loves to throw to. So I think the Browns have to figure out a way to stay in the game in those two areas. And if they do that, then they'll have a chance.